Well, you heard me talk about it many, many times, that one of my favorite guests is Dr. Nayantara Hensel, Professor of Industry and Business at the Industrial College of the Armed Forces. She previously served as Chief Economist for the Department of the Navy, and she's involved with what Peggy calls as NABE, the National Association of Business Economics. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with that organization, it's the premier professional association for business economists and those folks that use economics in the workplace. It's been around since 1959, and they do a lot of great things. And one of the things they have is they have a quarterly survey. And I'll be honest with you, I can't remember who spoke for them the last quarter. I noticed yesterday that Patrick Jankowski, who we had on from the Greater Houston Partnership, Patrick is a member of NABE. But we want to go over this report. We want to get Dr. Hensel's viewpoints on a few things, so we've invited her back, and she's been kind enough to join us this morning. Good morning, Dr. Hensel.
Well, good morning, Mike. It is a pleasure and an honor to be on your show. This is just a terrific show, and, you know, I wish I lived in Houston so I could hear it every day. Thank you for inviting
me. Oh, well, thank you.
I do too.
We wish you lived in Houston, too. you're one of my favorite people. I quote you all the time, even when you're not on the show, and I understand you're going to speak for my good friend, Dr. Tom Denny, out there at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs later on this year. And Peggy and I are going to fly out to meet you and see you because we really enjoy having you on the show. You really do a great job. I want to go right to your report, though, because this report that you've just released from NABE is very different from the one that was released in April.
Absolutely. No, this survey really shows worsening economic conditions, and we see this through much greater flatness in sales and profit margins relative to our last survey in April. We're seeing less emphasis on hiring. We're seeing much weaker optimism concerning real GDP growth. And we're seeing a lot of concerns from our panelists about some of the potential dark clouds in the horizon, the impact that the European crisis may have on their sales and has already had, and also the possibility of this fiscal cliff actually taking place, where the Bush-era tax cuts expire in December and we have the potential U.S. government spending cuts happening in January. But the good news is that there are fewer inflationary pressures. So, in essence, we are seeing a lot of the preconditions should the Fed decide to extend another quantitative easing program, worsening economic conditions, low inflation.
Yeah, because I know several months ago they were starting to use the word stagflation again, which kind of, I was around when that term really became popular. Back in the late 70s, I was in this business. I remember they talked a lot about stagflation. I guess inflation has abated somewhat. I think oil prices coming down has something to do with that. One of the things that really concerned me about your report was that, looked to me, that over 50% of your panelists reported sales unchanged, which is really significant, because I've always thought that, you know, a lot of the growth that we see in the stock market, a lot of the positive things we've seen in the economy, or at least from companies reporting, have come on the backs of people getting laid off and a reduction of the expense side of the ledger versus the revenue side of the ledger. And I've always said that, you know, eventually somebody's got to sell something and sales have to go up. It looks to me like that's not happening out there.
No, I think that consumers are very concerned about the shape of things to come. And that's why, you know, as you said, over half of our panelists did report unchanged sales. And actually, you know, 39% of the panelists in the survey only reported rising sales. And in our last survey in April, it was 60% of our panelists that reported rising sales. And you saw the same trend in profit margins. 29% of the panelists reported rising profit margins this time, and last time it was 40% that reported rising profit margins.
Seems to be such a dramatic difference. It's almost like black and white between the two surveys. Is Europe the main cause of this, or is it concern over this fiscal cliff? It's getting a lot more press lately, the fiscal cliff with regard to taxes. Or is it just a combination of things that are kind of creating a perfect storm here to change the attitude and change the economic environment?
Oh, I think it absolutely is concerns about the fiscal cliff, but I also think it's concerns about this European crisis because, you know, we had our panelists answer the survey between June 14th and June 26th, and you remember that, you know, the tight Greek elections came to their conclusion on June 17th when New Democracy won by a narrow margin. There were issues during this period at a major EU summit about greater fiscal unity at the risk of national sovereignty. You know, we saw a lot of issues about whether or not the ECB was going to have a greater supervisory role. Is the euro going to be sustainable? These are ongoing issues. So I think that these also, this was also a major concern for our panelists.
Okay, well, we've got a lot to ask you, so if you'll just kind of hang on with us just a little bit, Dr. Hensel, we'll be back. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, you're listening to Straight Talk Money, Business 1110 KTK, where you get straight answers to your questions about your money. Dr. Nayantara Hensel and Vernon and I will be back to you in just a few moments, folks. Welcome back, folks. We have a great show today. We have one of my favorite guests, Dr. Nayantara Hensel, professor of industry and business at the Industrial College of the Armed Forces. Now, that's a mouthful, but she used to be the chief economist for the Department of Navy, and we talk about her a lot around here because we figure that she's got political insight as well as an economic insight. And she's with us today to talk about the report that's just released by the National Association of Business Economics. And they report, they release a report every quarter, and it's really kind of a state of the union. It talks about, you know, they interview their members, which, like, for instance, Patrick Jankowski with the Greater Houston Partnership, who was on with us yesterday, is a member. So they're really broad-based. They're out there in every corner of our nation. And so I really think it's a very valuable report to see because it kind of gives you an idea of the health of really what's going on out there versus the talking heads and the political things we see all the time. And, of course, this year it's particularly bad. Dr. Hensel, Verna is just dying to ask you a question, but I want to ask you one more before I turn it over because I may not get the mic back once I turn it over to her. what about employment? That seems to be a continued weakness. There really doesn't seem to be much improvement there. In fact, even in a month where we may add some jobs, we're not adding anywhere near what it takes to make a dent in this employment picture, and it just seems to get bleaker and bleaker all the time.
No, that's absolutely true. I think that there's a tendency of a lot of companies because not to hire right now because they're just not sure about the shape of things to come. Over two-thirds of the panelists reported unchanged employment at their firms in this survey. Only about a fifth reported rising employment. And when they look down the line, basically, you know, only 23% of the panelists believe that employment would rise over the next 6 months, and that's a lot lower than the last survey, where 39% of the panelists were suggesting that employment would rise. In fact, we're seeing a continued trend of employment decreasing through attrition. I think 14% of our panelists this time thought that employment would decrease through attrition, which is much higher than the 5% in January. What that means is that basically when people leave their jobs or retire, the firm just doesn't hire anybody else because, again, they don't know what their sales and orders are going to be like in the coming months. We have to get greater resolution of which way the European crisis is going to go. Is it going to deepen? How fast is it going to deepen? And what's going to happen with this fiscal cliff?
Do you personally think it's going to deepen?
The European crisis? Yes, I'm afraid I do.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, the first time we talked to you, you actually kind of startled me a little bit because you mentioned that you weren't sure the euro was even going to make it. So, it's my opinion that the European crisis is going to get worse before it gets better. So I thought I would ask you that. But okay, Verna, take her away.
Well, my first question is, so what do you think about QE3? Is that a foregone conclusion or not?
Well, I certainly think the preconditions are out there if the Fed wanted to extend another program of quantitative easing. We are seeing worsening economic conditions, and we are seeing fewer inflationary pressures. But on the other hand, you know, it's unclear whether another round of quantitative easing would generate a lot of positive results. You know, interest rates are already very low, as all of us know, and I'm not really sure that an additional round of quantitative easing could add a whole lot of benefit. It's also very difficult in some cases for consumers to take advantage of these low interest rates because of the tight credit conditions on the parts of banks. You know, it takes a long time to refinance a mortgage now, and they demand an awful lot of paperwork, so it's getting much harder. I think it's you know, one of the things the Fed has done is they've extended Operation Twist, and that's certainly one thing that they can do. But really the Fed is running out of things that they can do that will have an impact on the economy, and I think that focus is more and more on the fiscal cliff, and that's unfortunately out of their ballpark.
Do you think we're going to do you believe that we will get over this fiscal cliff, or do you think it's going to be one of these last-minute negotiations of kicking the can down the road after the elections?
I'm very hopeful that in the last minute they're going to end up kicking the can down the road. But there's certainly a lot of concerns here in Washington. I mean, we're halfway through the summer. We're chugging on towards the fall. I think there's a high likelihood that the sequestration issue could end up in the hands of the lame duck Congress. And then basically it'll somehow get kicked down the road so that the new Congress, when it comes into place in January 3rd, is able to handle it. And I think that that's really what a lot of people are counting on. But, you know, you just really never know. And I think the last minute is going to make a difference.
Well, that's promising, at least. what about the Eurozone legacy? You think that the crisis is going to deepen. What do you think it's going to look like after we start to see daylight?
I think that it's going to be very difficult in Europe for the euro to be sustained. I would not be at all surprised if Greece ended up having to exit the euro, because it's very hard for the country to try to meet these budget targets. And, you know, it was a very tight election on June 17th, and New Democracy won only by a very narrow margin. And then also, as bond yields continue to rise for Spain and for Italy, I think it's very likely that those countries also could need bailouts, and that is really going to be stretching the capabilities of the overall, you know, European stability mechanism in order to bail them out. So, you know, I think that one of the challenges the euro faced is that there are a lot of different countries which have had different historical paths, and they've, as a result, had a different type of industry developing. And those industries are impacted by, you know, different types of economic forces. You know, there's more agricultural countries versus more industrial countries. And, you know, you're seeing some of that huge dynamic indifference going on in the levels of unemployment in these countries and the levels of inflation, and therefore in the types of things that these governments have to do to stabilize those countries and the impact that has on their budget debts and deficits.
What do you think of China? You know, China's been kind of the great yellow hope for us here in the United States. You know, we've had a lot of industries, a lot of small and large businesses that have been selling to Asia, predominantly China. It seems to me like they're going to, at least like right now, it looks like it's going to be a soft landing. But I would think that the slowdown in China, which is significant by their numbers. I mean, we would love to have their GDP and their economy, their consumption, but still, it seems that slowdown is probably affecting your members also, and affecting here in the United States. Do you feel like we're going to have a hard landing in China? Is this having a big impact on our economy?
Well, I mean, clearly China's growth is definitely slowing down, and China is a significant buyer of materials like copper and iron ore and things like that. You know, one of the things that we did when we surveyed our panelists regarding materials costs is we broke it down by sector. We have a goods-producing sector, which includes manufacturing. We have transportation, utilities, information and communication. We have finance, and we have services. And one of the things that was interesting is that our goods-producing, i.e. our manufacturing sector this time, showed 38% of our panelists showed that materials costs have been falling over the last 3 months. And some of that may be because China is buying less. They're buying less copper, they're buying less iron ore. So I think that, you know, as China slows down for some commodities, we're going to be seeing over time much less of an upward price push. And in a way, that's actually good for some of our companies, insofar as, you know, you and I are buying stuff and placing orders with the companies and they're producing. Well, their materials input prices may be a little bit lower.
Now, I know you've written a lot of articles. You've written over 50 articles and research reports, and I guess it was about a year ago, much was made of the Chinese control of rare earth minerals. And I know you've written an article on strategic minerals and rare earth minerals. Is this a problem for us that I realize they do not have all of the world's supply, but they seem to have all of the world's accessible supply right now, because so many places like the United States, that type of mining was shut down for environmental reasons, and it'll be a while before we can get it started again. Is there control of the rare earth mineral market right now an issue for the United States?
Well, you know, it is a significant issue, but I think it's less of an issue in a way than it was. I think that the U.S., as well as a lot of other countries like Japan, which is a major importer of rare earths, are really on the right track. It is true that China produces 95 to 97% of the rare earth minerals, but it only has 37% of the reserves. And, you know, there was a substantive increase in the rare earth prices during 2010 and 2011, but they started to trend downwards in the fourth quarter of 11 and the first quarter of 12, and here into the second quarter. And they're still much higher than they were back in, say, 2009, but they're lower than they were. What we have been seeing is the U.S. and also Australia, some of the other countries beginning to open up mines. In the U.S., we had a mine, Molycorp, that was one of the leading rare earth producers from 1965 to 1984, and that mine is now reopening. And it's basically expected by the fourth quarter of this year to be, you know, on a track to be mining about 20,000 tons of rare earths a year. And the Lynas Corporation in Mount Weld, Australia, is actually opening up from scratch their mine, and they plan to be mining about 20,000 tons of rare earths as well by 2012. We have a mine in Great Western Mineral Zones in Africa, South Africa, that's supposed to be opening by 2013. So there's a number of rare earth explorations and mines that are being developed in the Quebec area. And in fact, Toyota even has made a relationship with one of these new mines. Matimec Explorations, I think, has that mine. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of efforts on the parts of countries to, you know, find ways around China and to find alternatives. You know, the European Union, EU countries, actually do have significant rare earth deposits, but obviously the EU has not and is unlikely to be able to explore those a whole lot. Sweden actually has some significant deposits. And we actually did see this year one of the first attempts at exploration in Storkwitz, Germany, and the rare earths opening up. But, I mean, you know, rare earths are very important in clean energy technologies. They're very important in hybrid cars. You know, every Toyota Prius has 2.2 pounds of neodymium, and terbium and dysprosium have to be combined with it. We see this in wind turbines. They use neodymium iron boron magnets. The Department of Defense uses them in hybrid electric motors. We use them for on the F-22, neodymium magnets. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different uses for rare earths, and that's why they're important. But we have a good endowment here in the United States, and it's just a matter of time before we get those mines up.
Yeah, so between now and then, we have to try to negotiate with China, and they've got stronger cards to play in the open market, but I guess we'll pick up at some point.
Well, they do. I mean, one of the tough parts is that it is expensive to develop mines, obviously. And one of the concerns is that, say, you know, Molycorp, you know, finally gets its feet on the ground and begins, you know, mining substantively. Lynas Corporation Australia does. Can they sustain it if China begins to flood the market with rare earths? I mean, does that ultimately drive them out of business? China did this in the tungsten market in the early 1990s, and that's where it comes into play. Should the government be involved? You know, should the federal government be involved in trying to support resources that are important for national security? And from an economic theory perspective, much can be said on both sides. But, you know, that's certainly something to look for down the road.
Yeah, China doesn't always play fair. Verna?
So back in the USA, I'd be interested in knowing what you think about, you know, the bank debacles and, you know, increasing banking regulation. Should some of the banks have been allowed to fail?
Well, you know, as an economist, I was sort of trained as more of a free market type. And I do think that, you know, if we did allow banks to fail, a lot of people would be hurt. But at the same time, we'd be sending a signal out there as well that, you know, if you're not able to, you know, run a good, stable business, you may end up having to go out of business, and you won't be supported. I think it sets a very important lesson out there. And, you know, in economics, we sort of call it moral hazard. That's a risk out there where, you know, if you think that you're going to be bailed out, then you're much more likely to engage in risky behavior. And it's something that we even see sometimes in driving. And in cars, you know, a lot of people say in economic theory that people that drive a lot, you know, if they have car insurance, they're less likely to be careful about, you know, scratching their car or, you know, denting it as they're backing out or something like that. So, yeah, I think it sends an important signal that to just let a firm fail. That's a lesson for everyone.
Now, I don't, I know that you guys are not that are not political, that your economists are not usually political, but have you gotten any feedback from President Obama's comment about, well, I don't quite know how to put it, but when he basically, you know, the one they've been talking about the last couple of days where he basically indicated that success really is because you were, because of what the government provided and what the society provided, which seems to smack at the at entrepreneurs, that your success is not really your own. Have any of your folks been talking about that at all?
No, I can't say that that the panelists on the survey have. I mean, really, the only thing that we asked our panelists that's even in that zone is, you know, what impact do you think that you're going to have if the Bush-era tax cuts expire in late December and the automatic government spending cuts take place in early January? And, you know, should that scenario happen, 65% of the panelists expected sales to fall. About 15% of them expected sales to fall by 10% or more. So, you know, definitely what the government does has positive and negative impacts on sales, but so do a lot of other things. Things that, you know, the actions that consumers like you and I take when we go to the store,
right.
Do we buy or not?
Right. Well, and we've got a minute left, so in just that short period of time, I would like you to, how do we get out of this, Dr. Hensel? We are really in a period unlike we've ever seen. Is there a way out of this mess that we're in?
I don't think that there's a clear way to get out of it. I think that it's going to be very important for countries to cut their debts and deficits, and I think that that's going to have a lot of negative impacts on economic growth. I think it's going to have negative impacts on unemployment. I think it's going to raise concerns that people like you know, the average person on the street has about what their employment opportunities are going to be like in the future. I think we're just going to have to try to gut this out and wait. The good news is that a lot of countries are in the same boat. And if everyone in your class is getting an F, then maybe it's all okay.
No bell curve.
That's pretty good. Listen, Dr. Hensel, thank you so much for being with us today. As always, it's great to have you on the show. You always do such a great job explaining things to us, and we really appreciate the time you've had
with
us today.
It's my pleasure, and I enjoyed being honest. I
look forward to seeing you in the fall. Thank you, ma'am.
Have a great day.
All right, folks, we'll be back to you in just a few moments.